News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
There you go. It's also the hour we turn up your voice at 343-0106. We can converse on the text line if you like. That's fine, too. We often do that. Same number.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd love to hear from you, too. So feel free to call in, and we'll talk with you. 7 minutes after 8 o'clock at FM Talk 106.5. Really nice morning with sunshine, and we'll get into the lower 60s.
It was a big weekend in the nation's capital up in Washington, D.C. First, you have, well, lots of new congressmen and congresswomen and senators-elect that were sworn in for their terms heading into this new year. Congressman Jerry Carl was sworn into the 117th Congress yesterday. So was Congressman Barry Moore from the 2nd Congressional District, and Senator Tommy Tuberville sworn into the Senate yesterday as Vice President Mike Pence led that I guess you put the hand on the Bible and swear in, and Tuberville brought his own Bible like so many senators do, but Jerry Carl and Tommy Tuberville now official members of the nation's Congress. And
yeah, next time we talk to Jerry Carl, it'll be Congressman Jerry Carl.
Yeah, and I think that is supposed to be today. I need to check in with Jeff Poor, but I believe towards the middle of the week last week he said he thought that Jerry Carl would be coming on with him today, so I'll double check on that, but great. I believe that's part of the program for the Jeff Poor Show later today. But what a first week in Congress and in the Senate for Tommy Tuberville as we look ahead to Wednesday when Congress will meet to certify the Electoral College results. Now, for weeks now, months really, we've been talking about Congressman Mo Brooks, who kind of led this charge to decertify the Electoral College results. And for the longest time, we didn't know if Mo Brooks would be the only one to go against the grain. And
now they can fill up a bus.
Seriously, over the last week, major gains have been made in Mo Brooks' attempts to bring more people into that caucus, and now they're saying that over 100 members of the House will object to the certification of the results on Wednesday, and at least a dozen senators, including now new Senator of Alabama Tommy Tuberville, and probably the most high-profile of the senators, Ted Cruz from Texas. Now, yesterday, Ted Cruz went on Fox News and Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, and he led the show off, and Bartiromo asked him why exactly he's doing this and what the plan is for Wednesday. Here's Ted Cruz speaking yesterday on Fox News.
I think we in Congress have an obligation to do something about that. We have an obligation to protect the integrity of the democratic system. And so this past week, I spent writing out a position and assembling a group that ultimately of 11 senators that we put out yesterday that we will together object to certification in order to force the appointment of an emergency electoral commission to perform an emergency audit of the election results to assess these claims of frauds. I think we can do that. We can do it promptly. We can do it in 10 days before the inauguration. But I think we have an obligation to the voters, and we have an obligation to the Constitution to ensure that this election was lawful.
So rather than completely overturn the election on Wednesday, it sounds like Ted Cruz may be bartering in a way and trying to negotiate so that there's this 10-day audit from a commission put into place. He also said that many Democrats have said that he should be arrested. Ted Cruz and so many of these other senators and congressmen and women that are objecting that they should actually be arrested and tried for treason or sedition.
Okay.
Here's Ted Cruz's response.
Now, yesterday, when I released my statement with 10 other senators, I had multiple Democrats urging that I should be arrested and tried for the crimes of sedition and treason. Now, look, that's not helpful. At a time when this country, when we're pitted against each other, just relax and let's do our jobs. We have a responsibility to follow the law.
So that's some of what Ted Cruz had to say yesterday about his plan to object to the certification of results. But, this hasn't happened in well over 100 years. Was it 1870?
1874.
Okay.
Last time this happened.
That was the last time this happened. So, a lot of people are saying, what exactly happens? How does this work from here on out? And yesterday, Congressman Jim Jordan out of Ohio. He was on that same show as Ted Cruz and kind of explained what the timeline would be.
Vice President Pence will oversee the proceedings. There'll be an objection raised by a House member. We have, I think, probably over 100 House members who want to object to the various states, the six states in question, and then we have 11 senators. So if you have one from each, there'll be the objection will be raised as he calls each state in alphabetical order. If, let's say, we get to Georgia and there's an objection from a House member and a senator, then each body will retire to their respective chamber. They'll have a two-hour debate. There'll be a vote. They'll come back. If there's a vote to object and not accept those electors from that respective state, then they won't be accepted. And then you move to the next state. And if you go through that process and neither candidate has 270 electoral votes, then the Constitution is clear. There's a vote in the House of Representatives done by delegation. So it's that process is very straightforward, but there's a two-hour debate on each state if there's an objection raised by both a House member and a senator.
So that's Congressman Jim Jordan yesterday kind of laying out how things stand. Now, Jerry Carl, the new congressman from right here in our district, he will be joining alongside Mo Brooks and Barry Moore and the over 100 House members that Jim Jordan just mentioned there that are going against the grain and not voting to certify the Electoral College results. And Jeff Poore says that Jerry Carl will be on a show at 9:30 this morning. So you don't want to miss that, Jerry Carl coming on the Jeff Poore show to explain what his first few days in Congress have been like, what he expects this week to look like, and why he's joining Mo Brooks in this crusade against the vote.
He's probably exhausted at this point. Just everything. By the way, it was 1877, following the 1876 election, allowing Rutherford B. Hayes to become the president. What happened in that one was in 1877, the election returns from Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So just like in this case, certain states.
Right.
And one elector from Oregon were disputed. Congress then set up a commission. This is where Ted Cruz is getting all this from. Set up a commission to determine how the electoral votes should be allocated, reserving the right to accept or reject the commission's findings. So that's probably what's going to happen here, too. Congress awarded all 19 of the contested electoral votes to Hayes, who was elected with 185 electoral votes to Tilden's 184. So it actually did overturn the election.
Wow. So there is a precedent that's been set for this. Now,
I'm surprised that Ted Cruz didn't, you know, that he wasn't on top of that sooner than later, but because all the attention had been on Mo Brooks and his initiative to turn it over one way. But this idea of putting a commission together it's not brand new. But it's not. It was a long time ago that it happened.
Right, and you have to wonder, you know, with so many Republicans now joining Mo Brooks' side on this, how many of them are using the same means to different ends? Now, for sure, there's congressmen and women and senators that probably believe this election was outright stolen through voter fraud or what have you. The different allegations that have been made, but you have to think also that President Trump's name still carries so much, you know, weight in the Republican Party and with so many voters in America, that a lot of these congressmen and women and senators are signing on to this because it'll help win them votes, whether it's 2022 or 2024. But regardless, they're all kind of going about it the same way. Now, there has been some pushback from notable Republicans, including Mitt Romney, and I'm not sure anyone expected Mitt Romney to join Mo Brooks and Ted Cruz.
No, not in a million years. And also, obviously, the guy in Pennsylvania as well.
Uh-huh.
And it all might be a moot point because you've got to get every Republican on that side. You've got to get a few Democrats on that side as well. In the end, if talking about what Mo Brooks is doing, this commission, this is something different. If they put that together for a 10-day period, that could do that can make something happen.
Yeah.
On the way, FM Talk 106.5, 820 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwick on Mobile Mornings. Right, so it's confirmed now, Jerry Carl?
Jerry Carl coming on at 9, I should say Congressman
yes.
Jerry Carl coming on at 9:30 this morning on the Jeff Poore Show, so you don't want to miss that interview.
That is very timely. So not all the GOP, basically, you know, not everybody's on board with this. Some of the usual suspects, Lisa Murkowski, Alaska, Pat Toomey, of course. I guess, you know, his state is under siege a little bit, so that might be part of why Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania is pushing back. Senators led by Ted Cruz in Texas said they will object to certifying the results from certain states like Pennsylvania unless an emergency 10-day audit is completed by an electoral commission. And that was kind of new news over the weekend.
Yeah, and Toomey defended his state of Pennsylvania. He said that the president's loss in that state was, quote, explained by the decline in suburban support. Toomey released a statement. He said, a fundamental defining feature of a democratic republic is the right of the people to elect their own leaders. The efforts by Senators Hawley, Cruz, and others to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in swing states like Pennsylvania directly undermines this right. Now, maybe a little bit more of a high-profile politician, Senator Lindsey Graham. He has also now weighed in on this effort by Senator Cruz and other Republican senators. And Graham said that their move is actually a, quote, dodge that doesn't go far enough in helping President Donald Trump. So you can see the political games that are being played here. Graham released a statement yesterday and said that Cruz has a, quote, high bar to show there was evidence of problems with the election. And Graham also said Cruz's proposal has, quote, zero chance of becoming reality. So Lindsey Graham also weighing in on this, and he said that the approach that these senators and congressmen are taking is, quote, not effectively fighting for President Trump. It appears to be more of a political dodge than an effective remedy. Now, others would argue that this is a political dodge by Graham to avoid joining the coalition and saying that it's just not enough. But, you know, politics were expected to be played throughout all of this. And really, the guy who the man who has led this charge is Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks. And he's been in the news a lot lately. He's been on this station quite a bit explaining what he's planning to do on Wednesday when Congress meets to certify these results. Now, according to Fox News, House Republicans had a Saturday night conference call, which included about 50 lawmakers, including Representative Jim Jordan. Also, President Donald Trump was on the call, along with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
Please mute your phone. Please mute your phone. Can you imagine if they hadn't muted their phone?
That's happened in the past, and that would not be good. Brooks said that the members on the call reflected only some of the members of Congress who have committed to challenging the Electoral College results. Brooks did not identify the other House members who were on that call, but he did say the momentum to fight against voter fraud and election theft is rapidly gaining, and as a consequence, the numbers that we had who were supportive yesterday are almost always supplemented by reinforcements today and the next day, and that's certainly what we've seen over these last few weeks as more people jump on board with Mo Brooks. Now, Brooks was on Sunday Morning Futures yesterday morning with Marie Bartiromo on Fox News, and she asked him, she asked Mo Brooks whether he had evidence of fraud, and this was his answer.
Oh, no question. The evidence is overwhelming and compelling. In my judgment, if you were to get a non-biased jury that listened to the evidence, they would find 99% of the time that there was massive voter fraud and election theft in the November 3rd election. Now, having said that, let me emphasize that there are a lot of different things to cover, and of course, we have a limited amount of time in which to do so in this show. I'm not sure how much detail you want me to get into, but I'm more than happy to address it within the time allotted.
And a little bit later in that interview, Brooks said specifically that this group of people that are voting against certifying the results are looking at six states and potentially overturning those results. That all went for Biden, according to the state's numbers. That's Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Nevada. And Brooks kind of detailed why they're going after those six states.
Well, there are different reasons for each of them, but for example, as Congressman Jim Jordan just pointed out, some of them quite clearly violated Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, the Election Clause, that empowers the United States Congress, paramount authority, and then legislatures, secondary authority, to set the times, places, and manner of elections. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Wisconsin all clearly violated Article 1, Section 4, so we can either ratify that with our votes, that illegal conduct, or we can oppose it. I stand for opposing the violation of the United States Constitution, federal statutes, and state statutes.
It's more of a, when you drill down, it's more about the conduct of the states themselves and the way they conducted the elections.
Right.
Than just out and out bringing truckloads of, you know, we had those stories that were the first things that came out after the election, the guy, the UPS guy from Long Island to York, Pennsylvania, or whatever, and those things that were putting were kind of like, you know, this story here and this violation here, but overall, I think what they're really talking about here is the way Pennsylvania, for instance, changed the way votes could be counted. from which was the Constitution of the Commonwealth,
right,
said you got to do it this way, and they flipped that a couple of weeks before the election itself. I think that's really what they're talking about, rather than this massive fraud. It's the states themselves created the fraud by changing the rules.
Right, and it's, you know, hindsight is 20/20, of course, and I don't think I'm breaking any ground here where I say that none of us wish that this pandemic would have come along this with COVID-19. But if it hadn't, you know, so many of these states changed their rules regarding elections.
So many vote in. So many
mail-in
were mailing in their vote, and so they changed the way they were going to count those votes, and that problem. You know, in any event, certainly from the Republican perspective, you're saying, wait a minute, that changed the outcome of these states. And I think that's where the rub is. Now, whether they can, whether they've got enough political or legal authority to flip it over, I've got no clue.
I have no clue either, and I guess we'll find out on Wednesday. And you
since
know,
it hasn't happened since 1877, neither Dalton or I are well versed in the way historically this is going to come out.
But. Yeah, but we'll find out. It looks like so. This is expected to start the fireworks. Well, we've already seen the fireworks begin, and they I think begun in earnest over the weekend as we hear so many different politicians speak out on this. But the official time where this debate is supposed to begin is noon on Wednesday our time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And according to Fox News, under the conditions of the 12th Amendment to the Constitution, that's when both the House and the Senate will meet at noon Central Time on Wednesday in a joint session of Congress in the House chamber. So they'll all be there together. Vice President Mike Pence, in his capacity as President of the Senate, he is supposed to preside over this. But there have been times in the past where the President pro temp of the Senate presides in place of the Vice President. If that were to happen, that would be Chuck Grassley, a senator, Republican senator out of Iowa. But I haven't heard anything about Mike Pence not presiding on Wednesday.
Have you heard about a C-SPAN selling commercial suddenly?
C-SPAN should have maybe their biggest day of ratings ever.
I guess all the big networks will be there covering it live. But C-SPAN's like saying, "Oh darn it! Finally, we had a reason for the entire nation to watch." But C-SPAN still will have meager ratings, I guess, during all this.
And there's, you know, no real telling how this will turn out. You have to think that these Republicans will speak out, and they will, if there's at least one House member and one senator, they will force a vote on the floors of the House and the Senate. But how far will that vote go? As you mentioned, the Democrats hold the House, albeit not by a very large margin, but they do hold the votes in the House against decertifying the election. And then in the Senate, we'll find out tomorrow. Well, we might not find out tomorrow who holds the Senate, because you have that huge, those two huge Senate runoff races in Georgia, and the Republicans need to win at least one of those in order to maintain control of the Senate. But even if they won both seats, you would need all but one Republican senator to vote alongside these 12 senators that want to see this commission come out and have an audit for fraud for 10 days, but really tight margins. And with the number of Republican senators that have already spoken out against this, I just don't see how Mo Brooks and crew flip the numbers without
the numbers,
something major happening.
Numbers don't look good. Unnamed texter, and that is why so many people think the pandemic was planned and or calculated to manipulate the election. I would say that keep in mind, unnamed texter, the pandemic is a global event. It's not, we first saw it in China and Italy and France and everything like that before it even came to our shores. It's a major medical problem and health issue around the world. So I don't necessarily buy into the pandemic was the planned vehicle for all this to happen. Personally,
it's like you said, it's a global pandemic.
It's global.
A national election.
830 FM Talk 106.5. Love to turn up your voice at 343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to the first Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig of 2021. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing great. So a brand new year here with 2021, but same great service at McConnell Automotive. What's going on the car lot today?
That's right. We got great service going on. Also, last day of the employee pricing, and I promise you, I might be crazy, but I just don't see them continuing it with the inventory levels we got. Got a couple of Yukons in. Y'all want those? Y'all check those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Those new Yukons of 2021.
Mm.
And we got plenty of used cars. You can check those out online, too, at McConnellAutomotive.com. Got some, bought a Z7, a four-wheel drive Tahoe this morning, and it's got 50,000 miles on it. It's going to be nice. I'm going to put a little tires on it, go put a little lift on it. It's going to look nice. Also, we got plenty of SUVs. I mean, like I said, you can check those out if you go online. McConnellAutomotive.com, and Gene and I are not going to miss the deal. We need to move some of this inventory, so just give us a call at 251-476-4141 if you see anything you like, and we'll answer all your questions.
All right, I hear you. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Well, before we were even talking about this January 6th, certifying the votes, mm-hmm. and we circled that. All the talk right after the election was January 5th.
Right.
In the state of Georgia. I mean, that was the overriding discussion, was how important this Senate race was to conservatives and Republicans, mm-hmm. and all the outside money coming in. Like, I joke about this, but it's really not a joke. If this radio station were positioned closer to the state of Georgia, we're still in Alabama, but we had the earshot of Georgians.
Right.
We'd be rolling in some of that campaigning money.
Yeah.
They are not spare. Even when you went to Savannah way back, mm-hmm. right?
That's what I was going to mention. My in-laws came down for Christmas, and my in-laws live in Savannah, Georgia, which, you know, right up there next to South Carolina as well. So when I went back, when I went to Savannah in, let's see, late October, or actually mid-October, every single spot seemed to be political.
Crazy. I went through on my way to Virginia Beach, same mm-hmm. thing. Atlanta, Athens, Augusta. Eaten up with all political ads, and of course both sides.
And I'm sure the people that were tired of seeing that in Georgia and some of these states thought, well, at least the November election is here, and yeah, it will all end after
clear
this.
Things up.
And that certainly wasn't the case,
no.
Because now two just major runoff races that are happening tomorrow.
That's what I was. Those are the ads I was hearing.
And I asked my father-in-law, I was like, "You guys sick of those political ads yet?" And he said, "Man, it's just one right after the other." And that's how big of an important race this is. These two races, because obviously, the Democrats held the House in November by slim margins. I think they have 222 seats to the Republicans, 211, with two more outstanding seats that have not yet been determined. But in the Senate, the Republicans need to win at least one of these two races in order to maintain control. And that's these two races between Republican David Perdue and his opponent, Democrat John Ossoff, and Republican Kelly Loeffler, who's facing Raphael Warnock. Now, both sides have poured millions, and I mean millions of dollars, into these races, and it all comes to a close tomorrow. Now, the voting will happen tomorrow, but there's no telling how long it will take to get these results.
I mean, the presidential election, we're 2 months into waiting to figure all that out.
So who knows how long this would drag on. If you remember back in November, Perdue got about 88,000 more votes than Ossoff in the general election. But there was a Libertarian who also ran in that same election who gathered 115,000 votes. That kept Perdue from reaching that 50% threshold.
It was 49 point something.
It was very close, yeah. Like 49.8 or something mm-hmm. like that. So that meant that because he had less than 50%, that race was sent to a runoff. Now, in the other race between Warnock and Loeffler, there were many more candidates in that race. I think 20 candidates were in that special
wow.
election. And Warnock got 1.6 million votes to Loeffler's 1.3 million. And then you had Republican U.S. Representative Doug Collins, who came in third with nearly a million votes. So it sounds simple enough, right? You add up the Republicans that voted, whether it was for Loeffler or another candidate, then she should have plenty of votes to defeat Warnock.
But
things have changed
yes,
a little bit.
They
and
have.
Polls set to close at 6 p.m. our time tomorrow night. That's when they will begin counting ballots. And let's just hope that what we saw happen in November with the presidential ballot counting doesn't happen again here in Georgia, because it could take some time for them to count up all these votes. Absentee ballots must be received by the close of polls in order to be counted. Military and overseas ballots have to be postmarked by tomorrow and received by Friday in order for those to be counted. And also, stop me if you've heard this before, but absentee voters have until Friday to fix any problems so their votes can be counted. Mm. Now, we've heard from a number of Democrats in Georgia who say the number of absentee ballots that have been filled out for this election are just unprecedented. I think well over a million was the last count that I saw.
I think it's heading toward 2 million. Can you imagine that?
That's crazy.
That is crazy. So all eyes on Georgia tomorrow, all eyes on D.C. after that. Meanwhile, looking at COVID-19, the numbers, there's no denying the fact that the numbers are ramping up right now. President Donald Trump claims the numbers are, quote, far exaggerated, and put responsibility for the sluggish vaccine rollout squarely on the states. The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, appeared on ABC's This Week Sunday morning and said things are ramping up, and he actually seemed kind of hopeful for this point going forward.
If from April, May, June, July, and August, we do the kind of vaccine implementation that I'm talking about, at least a million people a day and maybe more, by the time we end the summer and get to the fall, we will have achieved that level of herd immunity that I think will get us back to some form of normality.
Herd immunity.
Mm-hmm.
That is the catchphrase of this virus for the end of the virus, if you can imagine that. But there's been a problem with the vaccines. Obviously, they haven't administered as many. A lot of the vaccines are sitting waiting for people to take care of them. I know that and put them in patients. CVS and some other pharmacies in the state of Alabama have started vaccinating nursing homes, and I think that's key, right? That's got to be your the first group, the first responders, and those in nursing homes have got to be the first groups they're taken care of.
Yeah, and I think the number that Fauci keeps throwing out there for herd immunity is like 70 to 80% of people that need to have, you know, some kind of antibody against the virus. But that number has, I think, changed over the months. And he said, you know, if a million people per day are vaccinated, then we could be out of this by fall 2021. Well, you have to have, first off, a million people that want to be vaccinated. And we've seen polls over these last few months where there's just a large number of Americans that don't trust the federal government and the rollout of these vaccines. And
but I've also seen places where people are waiting in line in their cars, in different states, waiting to get vaccinated, and being very frustrated by the manner in which they're getting the vaccine.
And I think it's not necessarily amazing, and you should really, I guess, come to expect this from the media over the years. But remember when President Trump early this year was saying, we've got huge vaccine news coming. We think we're going to have this vaccine by the end of 2020. And so many people said, that's ridiculous. You're putting Americans' health at risk. There's no way a vaccine will be available by this year, by 2020. Well, the vaccines are available. Mm-hmm. And then the federal government, in this Operation Warp Speed, they said, we want to get 20 million vaccine doses out by the end of the year. That was the goal. That's the goal that was made. And now that they came short of that number, media saying this was a total failure on behalf of the federal government, that this isn't a better rollout of the vaccine, when the same members of the media were saying that it was a risk for America's health to put a vaccine out this quickly, and that there was no way it would be done by 2020.
So, who saw Harris and Biden rolling up their sleeve to get the Trump vaccine?
Just a month or two after they said that they would maybe not do that.
Exactly. Politics, politics, politics. That's why they pay us to be here. So thank you, politics. It's 8:46 at FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings. Morning, y'all. It is Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on FM Talk 106.5. Boy, did I pick a good time to get into talk radio. So I sat in here for like 3 weeks. We let Jeff Ford get his show going. And I was learning the ropes. And then I was fumbling on the ropes. And then the ropes almost strangled me in my first 2 weeks. But then we started to figure things out. But the point is there's not a shortage of things to talk about. We're getting a lot of texts as well, including certainly just good to hear you back, Dalton.
Yes, I missed many weeks.
Yes. For a variety of reasons. But anyway, we're getting it together now. We appreciate the fact that you're listening, you're reaching out, you're calling, you're texting, and that phone line still is open, too, at 343-0106.
And speaking of the Jeff Poor Show, which begins in just about 15 minutes, he's got another loaded show today coming up at 9:30. You really do not want to miss this interview, the first for new Congressman Jerry Carl, who was sworn in yesterday. Congressman Jerry Carl will join Jeff Poor at 9:30 this morning. Then in the 10 o'clock hour, Dale Jackson from WVNN makes his weekly appearance. In the 11 o'clock hour, Alabama State Senator Randy Price joins the show. And then to wrap up the show, former Congressman Parker Griffith will join Jeff Poor. So you don't want to miss another loaded Jeff Poor show coming up at 9 o'clock this morning.
Parker Griffith, who, by the way, has got a political past on both sides, he's an interesting guy.
So he knows what they're both thinking.
He can because give you... he's that guy. He's a Republican. He's a Democrat. He ran as a Democrat, flipped as Republican while he was in office. I think I've got that right. But anyway, he's got an interesting, always interesting perspective. And he always talks to Jeff like he's just, like maybe just kind of sipping on something. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of giggling along the way. Like he opens most of his comments up with, well, you know. So he's a pure politician, but also he's got really good insight. So he's always fun. He's one of those weekly, you don't want to miss him guys, Mondays on Jeff's show.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, weekly guests, Dr. Fauci is a pretty common guest on the Sunday morning shows. Yep. And yesterday he made his rounds. He was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd yesterday, and something that Fauci said that's been overlooked that I don't think will be overlooked for very long, because so many people were focused on what Fauci had to say about the vaccine distribution and getting that to as many Americans as possible. But there was something he was asked about on Meet the Press, and I believe Chuck Todd asked him whether lockdowns on a nationwide scale could possibly be implemented under a President Joe Biden. And Fauci basically said that that's not out of the question, that we could see lockdowns nationwide like what we're seeing in California. Now, I believe the way that Newsom, the governor out there, and the state of California are doing this is they have tiers, and each tier has a threshold of a certain amount of positive COVID-19 tests for the number of people that are testing. And depending on where your locality is on that scale, they could put you in a full lockdown. And Fauci was asked about that yesterday. He said, we hope we don't have to do it countrywide, because we feel that if you adhere to the public health measures, you could turn things around short of a uniform lockdown. But he said it's not out of the question. And I think that is major news. It's something that a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats thought may be on the horizon if Joe Biden were to take office this month. But Fauci's saying, yeah, that could possibly be something that actually happens. To me, it's almost like a parent saying, you know, if you do your chores, if you do everything right, then sure, you can go see your friends. You can go to that sleepover this weekend. But that's only if you do everything exactly like I tell you to. It's kind of what this comment from Fauci sounds like to me. Sure, we don't want to put you in lockdown.
Yeah.
And we certainly don't want that to have to happen. But there are strategies where we could implement that, and would be huge.
There's one thing about, well, you know, unless things get to a point where we're all looking at each other and saying, God, I didn't think it was going to get this bad. Mm-hmm. Unless it gets to that point, there are anecdotal. I've heard some stories from hospitals saying, well, even not anecdotal, but the head of the hospitals here in Alabama was saying we could be at that point here very soon, where it's the level of the crisis that we were not hoping would ever happen. But unless we have that sort of evidence, in most states, I think there's going to be a lot of pushback to that. You can lock down as you want to lock down, but is everyone actually going to adhere to it? And will businesses be penalized by law? Will sheriff's departments and police departments enforce it?
Yeah, that's a big question. I still stand by my theory that I think one of the first things that Biden intends to implement is a nationwide mask mandate. So if anything, his administration could say that they're attacking the problem. Now, there's a lot of people who are going to be upset if there's a nationwide mask mandate, but can you imagine if Biden and Fauci came out, whether, you know, if it's a month from now and they said, listen, the numbers in South Alabama are looking really bad. We are placing a lockdown on, you know, this part of Alabama, and along with these other states that are having issues, we're putting you on lockdown. Forget what your mayor has to say, forget what your governor has to say, or any other representatives. That's us making that decision. Can you imagine the pushback that'll come from that, from localities, so many that voted for Trump in huge numbers, having the incoming President Biden say, this is what we're going to make you do. That's going to be a huge issue.
Yeah, so, right. So before we get there, you know, I know you're projecting, you want your prediction to come right, first of all.
No, I don't. I think a nationwide mask mandate is going to cause issues as well.
Okay, so, but I just think that unless we're at that point again where we are paralyzed with fear because it's everywhere and people are passing away all around us, I don't see how they can do it or how they can pull it off. They could have the mandate. They could create the mandate. They could tell us, hey, here's what's going to happen now. Mm-hmm. New rule, new sheriff, new president. Guess what's going to happen now? I just don't see Alabamians saying, oh.
No.
Okay. It's not the way this state historically has gone along.
I agree with you 100%.
It's all got to be about the state, about localities, you know, as drilled down to the most local you can. Is Monroeville Mobile? No.
Mm-mm.
Is Mobile Birmingham? No. So in this state, I just think it's going to be regionally, people are going to try to sort it all out for themselves, and they're going to be, if they can be comfortable with anybody's mandate, if you will, it'd be coming from a local mouth, and certainly not from the President of the United States.
Well said. Well said. I agree completely, and I guess we'll just have to see what the plan is here over the next month. Speaking of paralyzed by fear, I know we don't have much time left in this hour, but New Year's Eve, Thursday night,
yeah.
I expected to hear fireworks on New Year's Eve, and certainly did, beginning at around, I don't know, 10:30 my time, our time, and even gunshots in my neighborhood on New Year's Eve.
Gunshots, like, directed at somebody?
No, it sounded like it was shot up in the air.
Okay.
But there's been stories in the past where, you know, those bullets go somewhere.
What goes up must come down.
People have been seriously injured and even killed by that. So I was a little upset by the gunfire in the air. But that's...
You've got two baby daughters.
Right. I expected the fireworks, but now going on, what, day... We're on January the 4th, so four nights now in my neighborhood we've had fireworks at midnight.
And congratulations.
I'm just wondering how long that will go on. I don't know.
You've got some, you know, you have some hardy fireworkers.
They're committed.
They're very committed, but it's almost like, how do you keep... I mean... Did you go get some more?
Something that doesn't help. Alabama's always playing in a big game after New Year's.
Yeah.
So people save their New Year's Eve fireworks for
touchdowns.
Alabama wins fireworks.
An interception against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It's 8:59 at FM Talk 106.5. By the way, missing the sweaty baby updates from Dalton. Okay, well, you missed one today. Unnamed texter. We had one a little before 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Dan and Dalton again tomorrow.